Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the East Valley News for Monday, January 19th, 2026, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I'm Lauren Vicker, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. This episode features news from Mesa and Apache Junction. We're starting this episode with a story from the Apache Junction Gold Canyon Independent. Bobcat attacked three hikers near Gold Canyon in Tonto National Forest. This story is from the Tonto National Forest, posted Friday, January 16, 2026. A bobcat attacked three hikers in separate incidents along the Peralta Trail near Gold Canyon on January 15th, the Tonto National Forest reports. Tonto National Forest worked with the Arizona Game and Fish Department and the Pinal County Sheriff's Office to resolve the issue, it states on Facebook at Tonto National Forest. Injuries ranged from scratches to bites on hands and legs, requiring emergency medical treatment. ACGFD reminds the public to protect themselves and their pets by keeping a safe distance from all wildlife, especially animals that appear aggressive or show unusual behavior, such as a lack of fear of humans, it states. We will continue to monitor the situation and share updates as needed. Thank you to everyone who promptly reported these incidents. Your quick action helped agencies respond effectively. We've also received many thoughtful messages expressing concern for those involved, and we truly appreciate the care and compassion shown by the community, it states. Important safety guidance. People who are scratched or bitten by any wildlife must seek medical treatment immediately. Pets, such as dogs and cats, should be vaccinated regularly against rabies. In addition, dogs should be on leashes when outdoors and a veterinarian consulted if any domestic animal are injured by wildlife. To report an aggressive animal or wildlife attack, call the Arizona Game and Fish Department at 623-236-7201. There's a note here that the Peralta Trailhead was closed near Gold Canyon because of an aggressive bobcat. However, a second update says the Peralta Trailhead is reopened. And that concludes this first note. Bobcat attacked three hikers near Gold Canyon in Tonto National Forest. The next story is a health alert. Health officials confirm first measles case in Pinal County. This was posted Saturday, January 17, 2026, by Independent News Media. The Pinal County Public Health Services District has confirmed the first case of measles in the county, and it is associated with a person in federal custody. The overall risk to the community remains low at this time, health officials stated in a release. They noted, however, measles continues to spread in Arizona and in other states. The Arizona Department of Health Services reported 220 cases in Arizona for 2025. A case was also reported January 16th involving a person at a theater in Gilbert. Vaccination remains the most effective protection against measles, officials said. For more information on measles, you can visit azdhs.gov. The third story from Apache Junction. The Heart of AJUSD showcases student creativity, February 12th. This was posted Friday, January 16th, 2026. Apache Junction Unified School District invites families and community members to attend the Heart of AJUSD, the district's annual student art show, 5 to 7 p.m., Thursday, February 12th. It will be held at Apache Junction High School's Humanities Building, 2525 South Ironwood Drive in Apache Junction. The Heart of AJUSD features student artwork from every school across the district, highlighting creative expression from elementary through high school. The exhibit showcases a wide range of artistic styles, media, and student perspectives, reflecting the talent and imagination of AJUSD students, it states in a release. In addition to the student art displays, each AJUSD school will host a showcase table highlighting programs, projects, and experiences that reflect the unique identity of its campus. Community partners will also be present, sharing resources and programs that support students, families, and education in Apache Junction. The heart of AJUSD is a celebration of our students' creativity, with a selection of the beautiful work happening in our classrooms every day, Superintendent Dr. Robert Papalardo said in the release. We are incredibly proud of our student artists and grateful for the art teachers who encourage curiosity, expression, and confidence through their work. We're also excited to welcome our community to come together, experience what our students have created, and share in the pride of seeing their creativity on display. The heart of AJUSD is free and open to the public. Families, staff, and community members are encouraged to attend and experience the creative and student-centered learning happening across AJUSD. For more information, go to www.ajusd.org/heart of AJUSD. And that concludes this story. The Heart of AJUSD Showcases Student Creativity, February 12th. We move on to news from Mesa, and our first story is from the Mesa Tribune. Despite concerns, Mesa okays e-bikes in parks, by Cecilia Chan, Tribune Managing Editor, January 18th, 2026. Electric bikes with a top speed of 20 miles per hour and e-scooters will be allowed into Mesa parks on its sidewalks and on shared-use paths starting next month. Council on January 12th approved the ordinances, which include mandatory protective helmets for those under 18 operating or riding these mobility devices. The measures take effect 30 days after the adoption. I've really struggled with this whole issue, Councilman Rich Adams said. I'm going to support this because I think we need to do something, but I think it's just the start, and I think we need to continue to work on this. Adams originally voted against the proposal when it was introduced in December, citing concerns that it would cause an enforcement nightmare for the city. These motorized vehicles will be limited to 5 miles per hour in the parks and 15 miles per hour on the shared paths. Staff recommended lifting the ban on e-bikes and e-scooters in city parks due to their rising use for recreation and transportation. Having the ordinances in place will help the city enforce against the damages caused by these types of vehicles that are already entering the parks, staff said. Adams said he would like to see the city focus on minors violating the new law. He mentioned that he recently was at the Lehigh Crossing area during nighttime and came across a couple of young people on e-bikes. I had to swerve to avoid one of them, he said, so it's a problem. Children have to be 16 and older to ride these electric vehicles under the existing Mesa code. I think we need to take a look at their parents, Adams continued. Somebody's responsible for the conduct of minors, and it's typically parents. I hope we can find a way to bring this under control before some young person or persons or young child or whatever is either seriously injured or killed because the potential exists. Councilwoman Alicia Goforth agreed that adopting the code changes was a good first step. Once we pass the ordinance, it's going to be about educating, she said. It's going to be about signage. Most people who don't follow the city council meetings aren't going to know that there's a new ordinance. Mayor Mark Freeman pointed out that the police department could deploy drones if needed for enforcement, as Gilbert is already doing. We know that we may have to massage this later on down the road, Freeman said. Councilwoman Doreen Taylor said that she's seen numerous e-bikes go through her neighborhood and that Mesa wasn't the only municipality tackling how to deal with them. We made it illegal, she said. It didn't work. People violated the law. They would still ride in our parks, even though it's disallowed. And so now the question is, maybe if we are just kind and courteous, allow it, educate people, they will respect the fact that they're now allowed to do that. I don't necessarily think that that's going to be a perfect solution. She agreed on the need for very clear signage spelling out to the public what is allowed and what is not regarding these devices. I would like to remind the public, you do have bike paths that you can ride your bikes on, Taylor said. That's why they're there. They were very expensive for us to create for you. So I would encourage you to ride your e-bikes on our bike paths. And I would also like to encourage the public, as we go through with this, to remember to be very respectful for the other people that are pedestrians in the park, particularly the fact that we have a lot of families in Mesa that are enjoying our parks with children, including strollers, and we have elderly people that are also enjoying those public spaces. Resident David Winstanley said that enforcement of these types of vehicles needs to be a continuing discussion with the city. If you want to see what it's like with e-bikes on regular sidewalks, I ask you to go to Eastmark High School at the dismissal, he said. It is crazy. Somebody is going to get hurt. He requested the city consider no-ride zones, areas where even 5 miles per hour is too much. We have a serious problem in Southeast Mesa with electric-powered vehicles operated by children who are not observing any reasonable or rational rules, Winstanley said. I have twice in recent months had to slam on my brakes along Ray Road to avoid an e-scooter darting out into traffic or driving across the street. He said that at Eastmark's Great Park, e-bikes and e-scooters are zooming in and out and could hit the restaurant patrons or children going to the splash pad there. I do support this ordinance, he said, but I'm asking you to assign someone to follow up and bring to conclusion these open issues that are not resolved by this legislation. And that concludes this story. Despite concerns, Mesa okays e-bikes in parks. Our next story, Baseball Museum opening February 21 in Mesa. By the Tribune News staff, January 17, 2026. The Arizona Baseball Museum, the first permanent baseball museum in the state, is only weeks away from opening in Mesa. A grand opening festival will accompany its debut at the Mesa Historical Museum campus, 2345 North Horn, on February 21, 2 days after spring training season starts in Arizona. The museum traces baseball's deep roots in Arizona, from the sport's early days in the Arizona Territory through the birth of spring training, the formation of the Cactus League, and the generations of fans and players who helped define the game in the state. Exhibits will feature historic photographs, rare memorabilia, personal stories, and rotating special exhibitions highlighting Arizona's unique role in baseball history. Baseball has been part of Arizona's story for more than a century, said Susan Ritchie, executive director of the Mesa Historical Museum. After 2 years of hard work and fundraising, we are proud to open this museum just in time for spring training. The opening culminates the vision that local baseball advocates and city leaders had discussed for more than a decade. Buoyed initially by a $100,000 grant from the State Heritage Fund, Mesa officials and community partners formally launched a capital campaign in 2023 to transform the museum's large auditorium into a dedicated baseball experience. The effort was backed by the City of Mesa, Visit Mesa, and the Mesa Preservation Foundation. At the time, Ritchie said this state grant provided the long-awaited catalyst to move the project forward. This has been discussed for years, and it's finally happening, Ritchie said, during the campaign's launch. The goal was to raise approximately $500,000 to renovate the nearly 4,000-square-foot auditorium, allowing the Mesa Historical Museum to display, for the first time, the full breadth of its baseball collection in one permanent space. We have just hundreds of photos and objects and baseball memorabilia that we've had in our collection for years, Richie said then. We're looking at a space that's probably 10 times what we have now, where visitors can actually spend time with the stories instead of seeing them piecemeal. Richie saw the vision reach completion despite some major setbacks. In 2024, crews had to replace cracked main beams in the 111-year-old building's auditorium, which Richie said will house the baseball museum. The building once housed the old Lehigh Elementary School. We found that a major support truss was broken in at least two places, making it unsafe, and it needed to be replaced, Richie said at the time. Arizona became a spring training destination over 80 years ago, reshaping both the state's cultural identity and its economy. Yet until now, that story had never been told through a permanent statewide baseball museum. This is going to be the first, and right now the only, museum strictly dedicated to baseball in Arizona, Richie said during the planning stages. We want to tell the full human story of the game here. Museum officials believe the Arizona Baseball Museum will become a significant draw for visitors, particularly during spring training, when attendance at the Mesa Historical Museum traditionally doubles. City leaders also viewed the project as both a cultural and economic investment. The renovated space was designed not only to house exhibits, but also to be rentable for private events, helping make the museum financially sustainable. And that concludes this story, Baseball Museum opening February 21 in Mesa. A reminder that you're listening to the East Valley News with a focus on Mesa and Apache Junction, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Our next story, Civil Air Patrol maps Mesa's Falcon Field facility. From the Tribune News staff, January 14, 2026. The Civil Air Patrol Arizona Wing recently broke ground on a new Falcon Composite Squadron facility at Falcon Field Airport, marking a major investment in emergency services, aerospace education, and youth development in the East Valley. The new building will be constructed across Falcon Drive from the squadron's current 3,300 square foot headquarters, which was built in 1970. Once completed, the new facility will include hangar space for two Civil Air Patrol aircraft, garage space for squadron vehicles, and expanded meeting, training, and incident command areas for cadet and senior members. This is a momentous day for this squadron and for Civil Air Patrol in Arizona, said Linda Yeager, Arizona Wing Commander. Through the generous efforts of the Arizona State Legislature and Senator David Gowan, who shepherded legislation to fund Civil Air Patrol infrastructure projects, we are here to break ground for a modern facility that will serve our mission well into the 21st century. The Falcon Composite Squadron's roots date back nearly six decades. Originally chartered in 1966 as Mesa Composite Squadron 305, the unit was renamed Falcon Composite Squadron 305 in 1972. Its current headquarters was built largely through donated funds, materials, and volunteer labor by squadron members themselves. The squadron's legacy of service and self-reliance was formally recognized in 1973 when it received a Civil Air Patrol unit citation for planning and constructing its headquarters at no cost to Civil Air Patrol. The new facility will feature 5,878 square feet of hangar space and 6,675 square feet of meeting rooms, office space, and an incident command post, significantly expanding the squadron's operational capacity. Construction will be handled by Arizona Corporate Builders, with completion expected by the end of this year. City of Mesa leaders joined Civil Air Patrol officials for the ceremony, including Corinne Nystrom, Airport Director, and Councilwoman Alicia Goforth, whose district includes Falcon Field. This new facility represents an important investment not just in the Civil Air Patrol organization, but in the growth and development of the next generation, Goforth said. You show up when people need help, she told patrol members. You teach and inspire young people. You strengthen aviation knowledge in our community. That legacy matters. Falcon Composite Squadron 305, which operates from 4730 East Falcon Drive, was formally honored by the city in 2017 for 50 years of service to the community, state, and nation. It includes 36 cadets and 46 senior members under the command of Lieutenant Colonel David P. Renke. The unit supports a wide range of activities, including cadet leadership training, aerospace and STEM education, disaster response, search and rescue operations, senior member professional development, and public outreach. The squadron is also known nationally for its participation in Operation Pulse Lift, a partnership with the American Red Cross that supports blood drives. It is one of the most active Civil Air Patrol blood collection efforts in the country. Civil Air Patrol's Arizona Wing has invested heavily in small unmanned aircraft systems, SUAS, recognizing the growing role drones play in emergency response. Highly trained SUAS teams provide live video streaming, mapping, and post-disaster imagery to support search and rescue missions and law enforcement agencies statewide. Watching an SUAS demonstration flight is often a novel experience that sticks with members, said First Lieutenant Brett Seidel, the Arizona Wing's Director of Unmanned Operations. Many go on to pursue drone air crew training because they want to directly support or lead missions. Arizona Wing SUAS teams regularly train online and in person and conduct ongoing research into payloads, software, and airframes. In 2022, the Wing played a key role in developing the Civil Air Patrol Drone Wiki, a national training resource that has since influenced SUAS program development internationally. Across Arizona, Civil Air Patrol's reach is extensive. The Arizona Wing includes 30 squadrons statewide, supported by over 750 adult members and nearly 800 cadets. Its assets include 15 single-engine aircraft, 24 vehicles, and a communications network supporting emergency missions, training flights, and Air Force partnership operations. In fiscal year 2024 alone, Arizona Wing members flew over 4,800 hours, supported search and rescue, counter-drug and air defense training missions, and provided orientation flights for CAP, Air Force ROTC, and junior ROTC cadets. Founded in 1941 and designated the official civilian auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force in 1948, Civil Air Patrol is chartered by Congress as a nonprofit dedicated to emergency services, aerospace education, and youth programs. CAP operates the world's largest fleet of single-engine aircraft in support of search and rescue, disaster relief, and training missions nationwide. With construction now underway at Falcon Field, Arizona Wing leaders say the new Falcon Composite Squadron facility will equip the next generation of cadets and volunteers with the tools needed to serve their communities well into the future. And that concludes the story, Civil Air Patrol Maps Mesa's Falcon Field Facility. And before we end, one more story from Apache Junction. new build-for-rent community now leasing in Apache Junction. Posted Monday, January 12, 2026. Leasing is underway at Verge, a newly delivered build-for-rent community in Apache Junction. Located at 1297 East Broadway Avenue, Verge is designed to meet the growing demand for rental housing in the Greater Phoenix Metro. Verge was developed by 29th Street Capital, which has also delivered two additional build-for-rent communities in Goodyear. Verge isn't about breaking the mold for the sake of it. Barrick Wesley, Director of Lease-Up Operations with 29th Street Living, said in a release, "We're focused on delivering a great product at a great price, supported by a best-in-class on-site team that puts the resident experience first. That philosophy shows up in how we lease, how we serve, and how we build community." To support early lease-up, Verge is currently offering up to 8 weeks free. Verge has a commitment to pet-friendly living and is not charging pet rent, according to the release. Nearly all homes feature doggy doors leading to a private backyard, and the community has a dog park, walkable green spaces, and access to nearby walking paths. As a build-for-rent community, Verge blends single-family living with the service of managed rental housing. Headquartered in Chicago, 29th Street is a privately held investment management firm focused on multifamily real estate. And that concludes this short story, New Build-for-Rent Community, Now Leasing in Apache Junction. And if you still have your live or freshly cut Christmas tree, Apache Junction residents are invited to drop them off free of charge through Saturday, January 31st. There are two designated sites for drop-off in the city. The first is Apache Junction Animal Control, 725 East Baseline Avenue. That's a 24-hour drop-off site. And Prospector Park, 3015 North Idaho Road, which is open from sunrise to 10 p.m. Make sure that all decorations and tree stands are removed before dropping off your trees. And that is Apache Junction offers free Christmas tree drop-off locations. And that's all the time we have for today's edition of the East Valley News on Monday, January 19th, 2026. Brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, thanking you so much for joining us and inviting you to stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.